for our city. This is the FC Buffalo Show on 91.3 FM, WBNY. Now, from the WBNY studio, here are your hosts, Ben Tsujimoto and Nick Mendola.
What's up? This is Ben Tsujimoto today, filling in for Nick Mendola, who's got a little special event that he's attending to. But I am still excited to be here with Derek Kramer behind the board here on the Football Club of Buffalo show.
If you're filling in for Nick, then who's filling in for you?
Nobody. I'm off this week, apparently. So there's a lot to talk about, both locally and internationally, I guess you could say, in the soccer world. And just because the English Premier League season ended just, I guess it'd be 2 weeks ago now or 8 days ago now, there's a lot happening, and it's a really exciting period of time. So we'll have Nick Mendola join us, the actual usual co-host of the show, to talk about FC Buffalo's 2-0 loss to Cleveland this past Saturday, as well as the U.S. men's national team's 3-1 win over Puerto Rico. Later on, we'll have Michael Schieber, the vice president of the Buffalo District Soccer League, to talk a little bit about the first month of the BDSL season. He says it's kind of been an odd season so far, and maybe I think a little bit differently. So I think we'll have a good, healthy debate over what's going on in men's amateur soccer locally. But to start off, the biggest news, I guess, comes from the English Premier League, and that's the relieving of Louis van Gaal's duties from Manchester United, and only a 2-year stint for Van Gaal, the very celebrated coach that came over after David Moyes got fired. And the 2 years feel like they've taken a while. There's been a lot of discontent in Manchester, and granted, always the standards are going to be high, both for Manchester United and Manchester City. It's just, it's a part of England so rich in footballing history that whoever is there as a coach is going to be the hero or the scapegoat. And in Van Gaal's case, pretty clearly the scapegoat. But I want to give him some credit. Manchester United had a pretty gutsy win in the FA Cup final over Crystal Palace. Jesse Lingard getting the winner on that one. And Van Gaal's goodbye today was pretty classy. He thanked the right people, all the way down to the people in the laundry room, which I think they're probably underserved. There's probably some pretty rough laundry to do there. But it was a classy goodbye for a guy who didn't, you know, engender a lot of good feelings during his time in United, and that just comes down to the results in the pitch. It's really difficult to see a Manchester United team finish fifth, the one so that's won so many English Premier League titles more than any other club. But finishing fifth is just not acceptable, you know? And I mean, they had, you know, every reason to move on from Louis van Gaal. And in this case, now it's Jose Mourinho stepping in. So you go from one outspoken coach to even an even more outspoken coach in the former Chelsea man who was sacked around mid-season for the Blues, who was replaced by Gus Hiddink. And Chelsea actually played better, I think, after Hiddink replaced him. But Mourinho back in the fold in the same city as Pep Guardiola, who's assuming the reins at Manchester City. So it's a little familiar, especially to fans of La Liga, seeing Jose Mourinho in one coach's box and Pep Guardiola just, you know, a couple feet away in the other coach's box. Mourinho was at Real and Pep Guardiola at Barcelona, guys who were arch nemesis, Kramer, is that right?
I think it's nemesis
sounds kind of weird. But they just don't like each other, and a lot of that is because of the rivalry between, you know, Real Madrid and Barcelona and all the El Clasicos. I think there were 5 in 18 days at one point, which I think is a little absurd. But it's both off the pitch and on the pitch in terms of their dislike. There's just a lot of awkward and sometimes just downright mean, hostile, you could say, exchanges between the two. Mourinho often preferring not to mention Barcelona or Guardiola by name, but hinting very clearly that he did not like that team. And Andres Iniesta also speaking out against Mourinho with Iniesta at Barcelona and Mourinho at Real. So what is really setting up is a lot of drama in Manchester between the two new coaches of United and City. And it starts now, really. It starts now in the jockeying for players. I think both Guardiola and Louis van Gaal, Pep Guardiola and Jose Mourinho have their own plans to put stamps on both of these clubs. And I don't think Manchester United and Manchester City of 2015 will look a lot like those two sides in 20, well, 2015, 2016 as 2016 and 2017. I don't like sports that kind of cross years like that. It makes it difficult to say. But who's in better shape right now? And I think the answer to that is Jose Mourinho. He inherits a Manchester United squad, obviously coming off, a cup win, but with building blocks that I think are more exciting and more scarce around the EPL. If you look at Marcus Rashford, if you look at Anthony Martial and other guys, Chris Smalling in place, David De Gea in place, there's definitely needs along the back line, and I think Mourinho can address them, especially Mourinho as a defense-first team will probably bring a better defense to United than those fans have seen in, you know, quite some time. Whereas Guardiola, he might have to be more active in filling out Manchester City's roster. There's a lot of guys who you could say, yep, they're probably gone. Yaya Toure, much of the back line, a lot of misspent money there under Manuel Pellegrini's reign. But Manchester United fans have to feel encouraged despite finishing fifth. There's just the young talent that they were unable to unearth in Louis van Gaal's last year at least sets them up nicely. And Van Gaal admitted as much in his going away press conference. He said, you know, the cupboard isn't bare like it was before. We have like this blossoming talent. Jesse Lingard is another guy I forgot to mention. All guys either in their late teens or early 20s who, you know, could have another decade in front of them at Old Trafford. So if you're on one side or the other of the Manchester United, Manchester City debate, it's going to be an exciting couple months to see these two guys fill out their rosters. Already rumors of Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who's already said that he's leaving PSG, maybe going to Manchester United. Those reports are currently unconfirmed, but I saw the Daily Mirror, which, I mean, you can talk about their credibility quite a bit, but passed along by CBS Sports is just one of the first before I think a lot of rumors this summer break where you'll see Manchester United and Manchester City mentioned. So that'll be fun to watch. And then it really comes to a head in August where it'll really, you know, get intense between those two. And for two fan bases that were probably pretty unhappy after this year, it's good for them to see just a new set of drama ahead. The second topic I want to talk about before Nick Mendola joins us to talk about FC Buffalo and the U.S. men's national team is Barcelona's end to the season. And Luis Enrique today, Barcelona's manager, called the season a success. And they won the double. They won La Liga and they won the Copa del Rey. A nice 2-0 win over Sevilla. But the real question for Barcelona is it enough? Was losing the Champions League quarterfinal to Atletico Madrid and having the pain, I guess you could say, of seeing Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid in the Champions League final, two other La Liga teams who Barcelona may have beaten in league, but it's the biggest cup in the world, and Barcelona fans are watching two rivals play against each other. To me, that's I would see that as a failure because of Barcelona's aspirations. That's a really, really proud club, to say the least, and to be watching two Spanish foes duke it out in the biggest tournament in the world, probably not easy. At the same time, you got to give credit to Barcelona in that win over Sevilla. Basically, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. Javier Mascherano with a red card. Luis Suarez with a hamstring injury. Lionel Messi did not look like the FIFA World Player of the Year at all early on. He couldn't finish despite being in good places. But, you know, the best players in the world managed to take other options when it comes to changing a game. And it was Messi, you know, who fed two great passes to Jordi Alba and Neymar in extra time to win 2-0. So at least in that respect of coming but from behind, well, coming against adversity to beat Sevilla, you know, that has to be seen as at least a good cap to the season. But I can't say the whole season is a success just because the Champions League fall off. We can change gears now. It looks like we have Nick Mendola on the phone. And Nick, are you with us here?
I am with you in spirit and in voice.
Outstanding. It's good to hear from you. And I missed having you here because you would have had some pretty good insight on the Manchester United, Manchester City, Mourinho, and Guardiola thing. If you want to just reflect a little bit on that, what you think about the Manchester City, Manchester United happenings in the last couple months and what it means for next year, go for it.
Oh, sure. I think it's a reflection of how strong the league is top to bottom, of how much of a challenge the Premier League is viewed right now, that you will have two of the dominant managers in the world, basically with their choice of where they want to go, and both staying in England. Mourinho, it's a chance to not only go up against Pep in the same city, but it's also kind of a chance to, it's kind of funny for me, given Sir Alex Ferguson's ego, that Mourinho, in a sense, doesn't it kind of feel like a cantankerous move? Like, yeah, I'm going to go win where you did because everybody said it was all because of you, and I'm going to prove that it's not. And on the other hand, Manchester City, you know, Pep is going to really change a dynamic of how it's worked there. They've had some big-name managers, for sure, but have they ever had that guy who is going to top to bottom revolutionize a club? And I think it's going to be fascinating. And with him not winning the Champions League at Bayern Munich, it's a little bit of added drama there. So I'm excited for the rivalry, but I'm almost more excited to witness what they do individually, let alone in comparison with each other.
I saw a tweet from your coworker at NBC Sports Pro Soccer Talk, Joe Prince Wright, who had a lot of good things to say about Louis Van Gaal's, you know, going away message in his press conference. But one thing he did say was that Manchester United are pretty well stocked for the future. And would you say, or would you agree with me, that Manchester United is better set up right now than Manchester City as far as the pieces to really contend for a Premier League title next year?
Oh, for sure. I would say for sure. And I think Louis Van Gaal kind of fell into, he was forced to put some youth in there who turned out to be promising players. And Fosu Mensah and Rashford, Martial, that was a great investment. It was a risky investment, but I think it's going to turn out to bear fruit. So, I would imagine in terms of dealing with a European schedule, there's more depth at United right now, and I think they will smartly buy depth as well.
Before we get into talking about FC Buffalo's trip to Cleveland this past weekend, Nick, I want to ask you about an event that's going on tonight at Shenanigans. Can you tell me a little bit about what's happening?
Sure, I'm just pulling in there, and I'm pretty excited about it. Obviously, you know, I think as American soccer fans, there are things we don't know and things we need to learn, and for me, the idea of us having Sam Biles, who's a player who was with Arsenal from the time he was 7 until he was 18, and obviously playing for FC Buffalo now, made his debut this weekend, but has trained, you know, he's had several training sessions under Arsene Wenger, a guy who, as you might have read in an article online today, is still counts Jack Wilshere as one of his best friends, has made more than a dozen appearances for the English U16 and U17 national teams. It was just fascinating for us to see how that would translate to the league. But also, we found out it was fascinating to a lot of fans. You know, what brings a guy to the United States in the fourth tier? What makes him want to do this? What was it like to be there? And so we're going to mix in some trivia and some all-you-can-eat wings along the way. But a Q&A with Sam, I think, should be a pretty fascinating experience for fans of the English game.
Nick, I think you buried the lead a little bit there, and I think Derek Kramer's nodding his head in agreement. We heard the all-you-can-eat wings.
Yeah,
and,
both of us kind of
perked $6, up. For $6, these people are crazy.
Okay.
I mean, I don't eat the stuff, you know, because I'm a great Buffalonian. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, are you sure you want to advertise that? I mean, the guys on our team, the players, like, oh, yeah, we're going to come support Sam. Sure you are. Sure you are, fellas.
Shenanigans is Amherst, is that correct?
Yeah, Amherst, Tonawanda area, Niagara Falls Boulevard. It's right. How would I describe
it's right
it?
Right on just the corner, Sheridan. Isn't it? Yeah, right on the corner of Sheridan and Niagara Falls Boulevard, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Nice. And that goes starts at 6 tonight, is that correct?
The drink specials, if you're of age, start at 5. But yeah, Sam will start at 6. The wings, I believe, start at 7. And the trivia, maybe 8 or 9. I'm going to be there the whole night, so I would just send people to fcbuffalo.org.
Sounds good. That works out. Nick, talking about matters on the field as opposed to off the field now, the trip to Cleveland was set up as a pretty big challenge for FC Buffalo. Cleveland's a team that, you know, is very experienced and it has played together for quite a while. We've seen the same names, you know, almost since FC Buffalo has existed, you know. And it was a 2-0 win for Cleveland. What can you tell me about that match, especially in relation to FC Buffalo?
Well, you know, I think it's just evident that I'll tell you, I genuinely believe we are on par and with Cleveland on talent. And what I'll say is the only reason I'm not telling you I think we have more talent is because that would sound kind of foolish after a 2-0 loss. But, you know, when you opt to go for a youth-heavy team, which most teams in our league do, you're fine in week two whoever you play. When you go against a team that has already played 3 competitive games to our 1 and is full of players who have stuck together and they swear by the badge, you know, it's a challenge. Our guys played really hard and played well, and you could tell, you know, by the end of the game that they were real, especially in the second half. Even while we were chasing the result, chasing the equalizer, these guys were showing some incredible talent and some incredible skill. The challenge, of course, now, and I'm sure I'm feeding into your second question here, is, you know, we've really left almost every bit of leeway. We've thrown that away. So it's all about winning, and it starts with a very difficult game on Friday.
How dire of a situation is this? And as you just alluded to, you have Erie at 7:00 Friday at Robert E. Rich All-High Stadium. But how desperate of a situation is this? I don't like the term must-win games because it's, I don't know, at least now that I'm 30 years old, it sounds kind of silly.
It's overused also.
It is overused,
but it's as close as you can get to that. You know, I think on our social media channels, we've used the term must-win if only because it's an easy way to sum it up in, you know, 8 of your 140 characters. But it's a game that it'll be Erie's first game. I believe their 3rd or 4th overall, including scrimmages, friendlies. So it should be even footing. It's in our building. Last year, we owe them a measure of revenge. And I know Coach Murphy and I have already spoken about it, about how the game went down last year, and you know, ways to avoid that. So, yeah, I mean, we have to. It's very difficult. You know, our first game, not everybody was here. And that was, it felt fair to say that once pretty much everybody was there for Rochester. You know, usually you can't really use that as a crutch, right? Because, you know, you've made that decision and the other team is going to be in the same boat, but they really weren't. And that second game was tough. So I don't know how you say anything other than must win unless you don't just, you don't like using the phrase must win.
I was milling about Nichols School yesterday during some of the BDSL games, and a couple people came up to me, I think probably like 4 or 5, were like, hey, what's going on with FC Buffalo? Why is that team not scoring goals? And I'm going to, you know, pass that question along to you because I didn't really have a good answer for it.
Yeah, I mean, geez, you realize why people get into sports cliches, coaches do, when they get asked questions like this, and you want to say, you know, there's been a bit of unluck. Obviously, Kendall has an incredibly athletic play, Kendall McFadden, and heads a ball off a crossbar, off a corner attempt. Sammy Biles, barely in his first ever game on turf, just misses to the far post of an on-rushing goalie on a beautiful service by Philip Person, who was fantastic in the game. You know, we play a 4-5-1, and then it puts a lot of pressure on that one. And if you get too far up the field, you know, it's hard to bridge that gap. If you come too far in, you know, you need guys running off you. And I just think it's chemistry. Or not chemistry, synchronicity maybe is the better term, because the guys love each other. I mean, it's been this kind of fun thing to be around the group. Is there have been times in the past going, you know, beyond the Coach Murphy era, when you would get in a van after a game that you lost and you just hope they don't, you know, want to hit each other. But these guys, you know, they really like each other. They're living together. The spirit is good. And, you know, if I could go back in time, and I'll take all the responsibility for this, I would have even just found a way to scrimmage on the first day of practice against somebody. Mm-hmm. Because I think once this team is together and humming, you're going to see something really special.
A little bit more about Sam Biles. He, you know, he just came over, what was it, maybe a week ago now from Southampton Solent in London.
Not even. He came in on Thursday.
They came in on Thursday and then had his debut on Saturday. What can you tell me about him as a player now that you've seen him, you know, for a couple times in training and then once in a game?
He's quick. He's very smart. The one thing that I noticed about Sam at the first practice was that, and this is probably an Arsenal thing, when he makes that pass, he is immediately going where he thinks he should be to get the ball back or to set up somebody else for a pass. He's just positionally very sound. He's very quick. You know, he's certainly not the biggest guy at all, but he flies and gets to the right spots, and he's not afraid to go up for a ball, too. So good vision, some good decisions, and I think, and obviously, Ben, you're more than welcome to come out. If you come to a training session, the first thing you notice, with and with Jim as well, who came over from England, Jim Orvis, is these guys have a very good awareness of where they're supposed to be, and they're not going to shy away from 50-50 balls, which is something that we really... You know, if you wanted me to be critical about one thing that's befallen FC Buffalo, you know, maybe at the early stages of this year and at times last year, it's winning balls in the air in the middle of the park. You just get real tired of seeing balls float to the other team's head. Those are two guys who are not interested in anything other than winning the ball.
You guys signed a really deep roster, the deepest roster in FC Buffalo history this year. So you have to have some, you know, ideas for scoring options if your current options aren't working. Who are some guys who, you know, might get a chance to produce that we haven't seen yet that we might see on Friday?
You know, I can't speak to that, you know, because I don't want to... I will give you my answer and my opinion, but it's strictly my opinion. It's not something that's coming from the coaches or something I would suggest or anything like that, because Coach Murphy knows what he's doing. But, you know, I think our Phil Person is a guy who has proven through 67 minutes of work that he can put the ball just about anywhere in terms of the passing game. And I think that could set up any of the guys who might have been having trouble getting good chances to score. I think Sam is a guy who's going to get himself into places and potentially score. If Johnny McBeth was back in Scotland this weekend for family reasons, and if he's back, he's a guy that I'll be excited to see play. And to be honest, there are a few wild cards out there. We've got a lot of guys who maybe haven't seen a field or haven't even seen an 18 who I think are great talents if put in the right spot. So, you know, and I'll name some local guys as well. I like the idea of, you know, of what Braden Scales might bring to the table, or, you know, Bailey Winkle has done some pretty good things, but hasn't quite got those shots on net. If we can free these guys up into space, it's going to be a good ball game for us.
So that's 7 PM on Friday night, FC Buffalo against Erie. And Nick, that first, maybe some first time listeners or maybe people who aren't super familiar with FC Buffalo, what does the FC Buffalo versus Erie rivalry mean?
You know, it's amazing, because I'll go on the record now and say the team that I dislike the most isn't even Erie, but it teaches you something about rivalry. The team I dislike the most is Cleveland. But Erie, there's so much respect for them. And I don't like them either, don't get me wrong. But there's so much for respect for the way they operate. And I know that the feeling is at least relatively mutual, that it takes that dislike and pushes it way past Cleveland. And so our fans also hate Erie far more than they dislike Cleveland. And that's what a rivalry is. I mean, I can dislike just about anybody, but... We're going to have 100, 150, 200 people of our 1,000-plus crowd on Friday night just seething, hoping for a win, especially since they didn't see one at home last year. And we've just, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a rivalry at this stage, Ben, and you'd probably I'd love for your opinion on it. But our clubs, Erie and Buffalo, have performed so much better on the road the past couple of years. We have thumped Erie a couple times in Erie in consecutive seasons. And you know, they've done something similar to us. So I think that's where you, throw out the record books, is when teams dislike each other that much, there's no question that anybody, fans, players, coaches, especially with John Melody back in front of the bench for them, no one is going to overlook this game. And that's a big part of it.
Nick, I want your quick take, and I know you're a master of 140 characters. You can follow Nick at Nicholas Mendola or at NBC Sports Soccer to see his frequent tweets. But I want to ask you just very quickly for a couple impressions from the U.S. men's national team's 3-1 win over Puerto Rico in a friendly that's, you know, a tune-up to Copa America.
Sure. I thought it was as lethargic in some spots as you would expect from a group of players, many of whom had found out within 24 hours that they weren't going to Copa America, or they were there knowing that they weren't going to Copa America. Going up against a Puerto Rico team on a bad field, on a very humid day, I expected some lethargy. What my main takeaway from that game was, though, is it has been, going back to Jozy Altidore's days in the Eredivisie over in the Netherlands, since we saw an American striker, and I don't care who the competition is, playing with as much confidence and form as we saw from Bobby Wood. And I would play him over any other option right now. And I mean, even if I know he's not a big guy at all, I'd use him. If they were going to play some sort of 4-5-1 or 4-3-3 with a target forward, I'd still use him. Because that is a man who just, he's got a look of a guy who knows he's going to score at some point in the game. And on the Areola goal, you see the ball come across, and Bobby Wood actually kind of grimaces as it goes by him, as if to say, wow, I was one step away from bagging that. Because he's been playing so well, he just has that faith in himself. And that was my main thing. I didn't want to talk about anything else after the game. When I had to write three things, it was just about one thing, and it was about Bobby Wood.
That's Nick Mandola, usual co-host of the Football Club of Buffalo show, joining us by phone. Nick, thank you very much for your time. Enjoy that FC Buffalo event tonight at, you know, starting now at Shenanigans on Niagara Falls Boulevard in Sheridan.
I'm going in right now, and I can't tell you it'll be more than 30 seconds before I have a delicious cold beverage. So if anybody wants to stop down and hang out tonight, we'll be here all night. I'm planning on winning some bar tabs by winning trivia, and I would love to see anybody, and that includes you, Ben.
All right, Nick, enjoy your lemonade.
Oh, love lemonade.
All right, that's Nick Mandola. We'll be back after this break on the Football Club of Buffalo show. We'll have Michael Schieber joining us from the BDSL. We're back here at the Football Club of Buffalo show. I am Ben Sugimoto of the Buffalo News Soccer blog. That's soccer.buffalonews.com and on Twitter at @BN_soccer. We are going to touch on a topic that I'm pretty excited to talk about now. It's the Buffalo District Soccer League, and that's amateur soccer in Western New York. There's 66 teams, I believe, now. There's roughly 20 on each team. So when you think about it from that perspective, that's a lot of people around here who are interested in this topic, whether it's just playing and kind of following different players you've played with or teams that you've played against around. It just becomes a really small soccer world. And there's even more so than maybe college soccer around here. There's a real care for what's going on. And we're in a bit of a golden age in the BDSL. There's a lot of care for it, especially in the Premier Division. I don't think there's been a year where there's more talent from top to bottom in that. So joining us now is Michael Schieber. He's the vice president of the Buffalo District Soccer League, also responsible for bringing Buffalo's involvement in the USASA Amateur Cup, as well as the Werner Fricker Open Cup. Two teams from Buffalo played in that for the first time this year. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Ben. How's it going?
Doing pretty well. So what I want to talk about is just this first month of the BDSL season, and I know you've probably spent a good chunk of today looking over teams and looking at records and looking at players and sort of sifting through all that information. What is your overall take so far of the Premier Division especially?
Sure. This year, like you just said, was poised to be an exciting one, being so big. I think what we're looking at this year is one of our most balanced years ever. And I think in most of the divisions, the standings kind of read that way. Especially in, I would say, like D2 is maybe one of the most parity-driven divisions, along with even championship this year is pretty wide open as I look at it. But in Premier, it's a little bit different, I guess I would say. We kind of have maybe two favorites, then a chunk of playoff teams who are possible, and then the bottom half of the table fighting for, I guess to stay up in that Premier spot. So on the whole, the first month has been pretty exciting. Lots of different score lines, a lot of stuff that surprised me, a lot of stuff that didn't surprise me. So it's been a fun opening month to the season for sure.
Let's start with the two teams at the top. Amherst Sharpshooters won over the BSC Raiders yesterday 4-3 in a pretty wild game in Nichols. Amherst scored the first four goals, and then BSC, basically sort of chipped away at the lead to the point where it was 4-3 and they were pressing late and they couldn't quite get the equalizer. But it showed how close these two teams are against each other, even though it was sort of run against run in this game. What are your opinions on the differences between the two teams so far, and which team you think is probably in the best shape moving forward?
Sure, for sure. I mean, this is probably two of the teams who aren't surprising anyone with their, really good opening month here. And yesterday, it's a shame it was earlier in the day. I would have loved to have watched this one, but unfortunately, I had a game at 4, so I couldn't quite make the 2 to 4 o'clock drive. But I did follow along, as I believe it was live tweeted for the most part by yourself. These two teams are pretty much came into the season with championship aspirations and basically have done nothing but show themselves to be exactly that. So yesterday's contest is kind of telling to maybe a potential playoff matchup. Or even a championship game. And going forward, like I think you asked who is maybe in better shape. I guess I would say Amherst. I look at their opening slate. They played Queenston. They played Soho, two teams who are probably going to be in the playoff hunt. Got really good results. Obviously, they're undefeated, so won both of those contests. Raiders, on the other hand, I mean, they took care of business against, BSC Inter and Celtic United. Both teams have played Celtic United. But they still have some bigger names left on the schedule. So if you were to ask me who is in better shape, obviously Amherst have the win over Raiders now too. That doesn't hurt. Their goal differential, especially the goals against, is amazing. That defense is just probably the tops in the league right now. So going forward, Sharpshooters probably have the inside advantage to the regular season title. But we all know that the team that Raiders is, the players on that team. So I don't think finishing in second is going to, make them think that they can't get a result over Sharpshoes or even the result yesterday. So
there is a ton of pride on that BSC Raider side. And there's also that going along with that is an equally as strong hatred of losing.
Granted,
I think they have the perspective that, yeah, this is men's league soccer and it's not a life or death circumstance. And I think, Chris Pepper, a longtime BDSL player, his death this past week sort of brought that into perspective for us, that this is men's league soccer and there are much bigger things going on in life than that. So I'm not trying to pretend that the BDSL is this massive life-changing thing. But at the same time, I want to say that Raiders, they are very competitive and this is a very high level of soccer. And I don't necessarily want to say that there's already a rivalry brewing, but these are two teams where if you're going to go watch them, it's going to be an entertaining match. So
I would definitely say that there is a rivalry there. I mean, knowing both the managers, these are two teams who know that they're at the top of the BDSL pile and that they know that they want to get over on each other. I mean, there's definitely a lot of mutual respect between the clubs because, they are in the positions that they are. But they're well aware of the expectations that they had coming into the season, and so far so good for both teams as they seem to be pretty much fulfilling them.
Should we talk about some of the clubs we view as disappointments so far? There's a couple that are
sure.
a couple that are jumping out at me that I thought would be higher up the table without a doubt at this point. But I'm interested in hearing what your thoughts are.
Sure. Who's the club that I'm interested to know who you thought would be higher up the table?
I'm not telling until you talk about yours.
Okay. Well, I guess if you want to finger one team in Premier who's underperforming, I have two. I had Yemen Elite up a lot higher up the table, and they're sitting here with no wins after June. The league worst, goals against, which is surprising to me. They haven't played the most impressive schedule. They have Sharpshooters, Raiders, Queenston, all left to come. Oof. So they're, for me personally, they are the most disappointing club in Premier so far. I guess some people will point to Buffalo United as having underperformed so far. I'm not so sure on that. Coming into the year, I liked a lot of their ads. Clifford, for one, was good. Richie Gordon, Marlette. They added some nice pieces up top. But on the back end, losing Sese, and the defense just seems to be a little bit older, and that hasn't really bode well for them this year. They're like third worst in goals against. So defensively, they've been struggling. And this year, I know my predictions actually didn't make it out in time before the season. But if you were to ask me beforehand, I would have said I didn't think they were going to make the playoffs this year. So some people might finger them as being the biggest disappointment. But for me, it's definitely Yemen Elite.
You know, I hate to agree with you on both of them, but I agree with you on both of them. And one of the issues with Bus that I highlighted in the news is BDSL premiere preview is that they're simply getting older, you know, and this is a team that's also run into some issues in attendance. And I think it's a team that can't afford to have those attendance issues, you know, especially up top. You know, their loss this week, what came against Queenston 4-0 was, which you could probably classify as a bit of a drubbing, but they were without Kyle Clifford and without Richie Wilson, another striker. So if your two best scoring talents and also Mate Tarr, your three best scoring talents aren't in the lineup, then you're putting yourself behind the eight ball pretty far. So
yeah, in our league, attendance is half the battle. So right. If you have reliable numbers that you can count on each and every week, an adult men's league, obviously everyone's got stuff going on the weekends. It's summertime. So if you're not 100% committed, that's understandable. But, if you want to be considered one of the best teams, attendance is definitely going to be a huge impact on your season. And you're absolutely right. Buses kind of struggled along that, getting that consistent numbers. And I would say Yemen Elite is in that, case too, that my team played them yesterday. I believe that they only had 2 to 3 subs, and I know they have a roster limit of 22, and they're not capped out, but they're pretty close to it. So attendance has hurt them, but I wouldn't pin it down on that alone. No.
If you had to choose between one of those two clubs in terms of which one turns it around, if any of them turn it around, which would you point to?
I guess I would lean more towards United being able to climb up the table from the reporting I heard yesterday. Though they've lost 4-0, they still did a good job maintaining possession against Queenston, and Queenston's a pretty good side in Premier. So I guess I could think that Bus could still climb up the table. I still don't think they're a playoff team, looking at what they have remaining. But Yemen Elite, to me, I don't know if they're going to be able to rebound and really go any farther. I think they're kind of in the relegation hunt at this point.
The playoff picture is, I think, more exciting to talk about this year, just because there are 6 teams in it. You know, the top 2 seeds getting a bye, and then 3 playing 6 and 4 playing 5, and then the winners of those games, you know, playing against the top 2 seeds in the semifinals. That, to me, is a really interesting move, because while it doesn't necessarily reward the best regular seasons, it also allows more people a chance at, you know, a good postseason run. And if you look at the table between teams right now, 3-6, those are some really interesting clubs there who, you know, aren't that far away from Sharpshooters and Raiders. Who among that sort of middle pack that's still in the playoff picture, and everybody's still in the playoff picture, but those clubs that are at least right now behind the top 2, who's jumping out at you as somebody who, you know, could probably finish 3rd and make some noise in the playoffs?
Sure. Queenston is really hot right now. Their last 2 games, they've had sort of an offensive explosion, going 9-0 goal differential in those games. So they've been playing really well recently. Ross Suter, probably one of the best players in the league on a whole, I would say. Defensively, they've always been a very strong team. And even though they lost Eric Barnes, they've really rebounded nicely. Hoffman has done a great job filling in for them, the Duncan brothers back there. So they've had a really good start. I guess my favorite of the middle pack would be Rogue when they're there and all ready to go. The names on that roster, the Walsh brothers, Zach Thomas, Serto, they just have a lot of firepower on that team. Their defense is very underrated. They have size, they have speed, they have just about everything you could want. Again, attendance for them has been a little questionable. So if they can get that in their favor, they're my third favorite team. But I guess you can never really discount the two teams in fifth and sixth in Soho FC. I mean, they're a storied franchise here in the BDSL. We all know the players on that team. It seems every year anyone wants to try and kick dirt on them, they come back and have a great season, and there they are right there again in the middle of the playoff pack. So can't discount them. And I was really impressed with Clarence in the couple of games that I've seen against them. I was kind of surprised that Raiders handled them so easily, it seemed. But they have a good squad too, highlighted by the addition of Conti. I thought he was a really smart pickup, and he's done really wonders out wide for them this year.
It's funny, you can sort of look at Rogue and Queenston now to an extent as like the two younger upstart teams. As you know, Queenston might have a slightly older base, but you know, they've just kept on funneling young talent. I think of you know, Albright, Contronio, Brady, and so forth. And whereas Rogue is like, the average age on that team is probably, I don't know, I'd say like 22 or 23.
Yeah. Right.
So, but then it's also, as you mentioned, Soho and Clarence are probably two of the oldest teams in Premier. And it's funny seeing the dichotomy between those, in those four teams, and when they play each other, the kind of styles going against, is it really makes for a pretty interesting watch for soccer fans, even if you don't have like a rooting interest or you don't know anybody on the team. So that's what's really interesting and one of the cool charms about the BDSL, I think.
Yeah, I mean, any week you go and watch a game, you're definitely going to see contrasting styles. There's definitely lots of teams in our division who like to play a smart possession, and then there's the teams who are quick on the counter. FC Yemen is one of those teams. So there's always contrasts within our league. And I think, you know, you in our division, you kind of have to use the players available to you, figure out a style that works. Last year, my team was a possession-based team. And this year, I mean, we're pretty much the opposite of that. We're a counter-attacking team. So you kind of have to take the personnel available to you and considering your opponents and kind of play that way. I mean, there might be a style you like to play, but almost week to week, you have to base it on who's available to you and who you're going up against.
That's a good point. Let's talk a little bit about your team. We're on the phone here with Michael Sheeper, who's the vice president of the BDSL, but also plays for Ruse FC, a team that's been around for, you know, quite some time. I look back at the BDSL website, that's bdsl.org, and you can see Ruse through the years. And I know there's been branches in various directions, but Ruse has stayed, you know, pretty consistent, but also gotten better in terms of where they're moving up the table. Talk about a little bit about the club's history, I guess, and then a little bit about how you guys are doing this year.
Sure. So we've actually been around a lot longer than even the website indicates. Our first year was back in 1998. So we have some players who are now on the team whose father played for Ruse, and that time has come and passed. And our first year is our only trophy as a club. We won the Teal Cup our inaugural season in 1998, so we do have that in our back pocket. We've always been kind of a longstanding championship club, but recently through our additions, we've gotten stronger and have now moved into Premier, which was very exciting for us last year. And we really enjoyed the challenge that it's been moving up and being a Premier side now. So this year, it's kind of been a revitalized team, a lot of changes. And initially, if I'm being totally honest, I wasn't sure how it was going to work out. But after the first four games, I'm actually much more optimistic about our chances moving forward. I really think it took a couple games for us to kind of find ourselves out there on the field. You know, communication is key, obviously, and not knowing each other as well as we may have liked played a role and maybe some really poor results. But I look back at our games and I though some of them may have looked lopsided, I think we could have performed better in a lot of them. We have a daunting June schedule coming up for us. So if we can manage to get, if we can get 2 points out of our four games, I'd be pretty pleased. So one win would be a great run of June for us. I'm making no, you know, I'm under no false pretenses about our standing. We're definitely on the bottom end of the table. That's just kind of where things shook out for us. and it's up to us if we can fight it out and stay above the relegation scrap.
Yeah, and your next 4 weeks after the break for Memorial Day, you have BSC Raiders, Celtic United, Soho FC, and Amherst Sharpshooters. So it's kind of a cruise to the top of the table for upcoming for Ruse. So
basically. And United, though they're down towards the bottom with us, I think that's a little deceptive. They had a lot. They're a predominantly college-based team. So those first 2 weeks where they had some bad losses were pretty shorthanded. And I think going forward, they might be a team who can sneak up into the playoff race if teams aren't careful. So I'm not, like I said, if we can get 2 to 3 points in this stretch, I'd be pretty pleased.
Let's go to some of the storylines outside of the Premier Division. I know in the Buffalo News soccer blog, just because I only have so much time in my life that I can really only cover Premier, and I do that as sort of haphazardly sometimes. But there's a lot going on around the league too. You know, this is the BDSL has 5 divisions, you know, plus and over 35. So there's a whole lot of teams who, you know, don't quite fit in a lot of the subjects that we're talking about. But what are some of the other storylines that you look at across the league that, you know, might interest the, local soccer aficionado?
Sure. So I think if we take a trip down the divisions and championship, atop the leaderboard right now is Southtown's FPFC, formerly known as Lakeshore, and they should probably go back to being known as Lakeshore.
Agreed.
But that's a discussion for another time. They're kind of, I kind of liken them to the Ruse and their previous struggles as being a team who was always considered to be a favorite for promotion, but just haven't quite, for whatever reason, been able to get over the hump in the semifinals. This last year was a total disappointment for them. And this year they've kind of sprung back to life and sit atop the leaderboard. Right behind them is Wolfpack, another team who has been a long-standing tradition of being a championship-level team. So it'll be interesting to see if they can carry this early momentum. They've kind of grinded out wins this year. So it'll be interesting to see if they can continue to, you know, be one of the favorites. A big disappointment, I guess, in championship, I would label as East Aurora FC. I watched them in their Teal Cup game, and they looked fantastic, albeit it was against the first division team, but a pretty strong first division team in Elmwood Saints. So to see them with already 2 losses on this season is pretty shocking. I thought they were the championship favorites, and so far they've kind of been a little disappointing. And the other team, I guess, I would look at in championship would be, can either of the Celtic teams stave off relegation? And both Hoops and Celtic, the reformation of those teams kind of hasn't gone that well so far, and neither one of them are in all that great shape as far as the relegation goes. And in first division, these were the favorites coming in. This is probably the division that, when I look at the standings, it's gone pretty much how I thought it might go. Panthers, B-City, Elmwood Saints, Spal, they all occupy playoff spots. Before the season, I had them all as some of the best teams in there. I guess the surprise for me being up high this early is maybe FC Quake. I was a little skeptical on their offense, but they've done pretty nicely. Their GD is only 2, so you know, they have pulled it out in close games so far. So we'll see if that can continue. Maybe a disappointing team down there would be Amherst Alliance. Although they are a new Division I team, I kind of expected them to be maybe a little bit higher up the table. It is only 1 month, but they do have 2 losses and a draw and only 1 win with a -1 GD. So I kind of expect a little bit better from them. I don't think anyone has to worry about being relegated, because I think Depew, Village, and Nickel City have those spots pretty much locked up after only a month of play.
That's discouraging.
I know. Not, unfortunately, that's kind of what I see. In D2, like I said, this is pretty parity driven. It seems like results are kind of scattered. In the first couple of weeks, it kind of seemed like DSC Buffalo might be one of the teams to beat, but they now have kind of pulled back to the middle of the pack. Tonawanda United now sits at the top of the table. I thought they might be in some trouble. They lost a lot of good goal scorers last year, but they've really relied heavily on a defense. They now only have 3 goals against, leading the way in that division. So seeing them atop the table is a little bit of a surprise for me. Behind them are Meerkats, who I fingered as the number one team coming into the season. I think a team you're familiar with, Rampart FC, is in third. I always have high hopes for them, but they seem to disappoint me. I'm not really sure. Maybe you can tell me why later.
Me too. They disappoint me as well.
And then down at the bottom, maybe Westside FC, they would probably label this a disappointing year. I kind of expected them to fall back a little bit. Again, another Celtic team, 1988, no one really knew, or 1888, excuse me, no one really knew what to expect from them. But knowing that they came from the Celtic family, I kind of expected a little bit more than 1-3 with minus 12 being the worst goal differential in the division. So be interesting to see how they rebound going forward. And then I guess when you look at D3, Dutch FC was probably the favorite coming in. They've shaken off kind of a rocky start and now sit in third. LaSalle and Marks and Youngstown Marksmen in first place, two new teams, really doing well for themselves, making an early name. Devils are kind of up and down. A surprising loss for me for them last week, but I would still call them a playoff team. Maybe, again, the biggest disappointment following their biggest disappointment status from last year would be Great White Buffalo, a team who really, I think they should expect more out of, you know, a 1-3 May. Just really not doing much defensively, one of the worst defensive records in the league, and goals seem to be hard to come by for them, too. So I guess those might be some of the teams I would look at in each of the divisions as maybe underperformed or overperforming.
And let's talk really fast about the Teal Cup.
Sure.
The Teal Cup is the oldest amateur men's soccer tournament in the U.S. Is that correct? I think so.
It is.
It is. And so last year, FC Yemen beat Queenston in the final, and FC Yemen is the reigning champions, and they went ahead and they played in the Werner Fricker U.S. or Werner Fricker Open Cup, Region 1. So there's a little bit of a prize at the end of the Teal Cup for any team that wins. Who do you see as maybe a couple of the favorites? Are we still talking about BSC Raiders and Amherst Sharpshooters, or are we looking at maybe at other teams who have a more favorable draw who maybe get better attendance numbers?
I mean, I would still say, you know, those teams are the favorites. They're going to have to meet. Sharpshooters and Raiders would have to meet before the final, the way the bracket came out. So, I mean, for me, they're still the favorites. It's their tournament to lose, but the beautiful thing about Teal Cup, especially the past couple of years, is a championship side, I believe, has won maybe 3 or 4 straight Teal Cups.
Wow.
So it seems like no matter who the favorite might be, you just never really know in one-game eliminations. I always try to make it out on Thursdays to West Seneca because there always seems to be games there to catch a couple. So Teal Cup is so great. We're so lucky to have this tournament for our league. I love the Open Cup format. Some people don't, but you know, there have been a few upsets already. I always hope that there are more along the way. And like I said, so far championship teams have really stepped up to the plate the past couple of years. Granted, almost all of those championship teams now can call themselves premier sides, but you know, that's the way this tournament goes. You have a chance to prove yourself against the teams higher up the table, and you have one shot to do so. And you take your shot. Who knows what can happen on a given day?
Well, thank you very much to Michael Schieber for joining us. He's the VP of the BDSL, and he also plays for Ruse FC. And he was very instrumental in getting the BDSL teams as part of the Western New York Soccer Association into both the USASA Amateur Cup and the Werner Fricker Open Cup. So well done so far, Michael Schieber, and best of luck as you go ahead with the BDSL. We may have you back on the show again at some point as the season starts to wind down and the playoff picture begins to crystallize. But thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ben. I just real quickly want to say thanks to you and having us on. We always appreciate that. And of course, thoughts and prayers to Chris Pepper and his family and all of Celtic United. Was really special this weekend having a moment of silence for him, a guy I knew. So just wanted to include that too before I left. But thanks again, Ben, and I'll talk to you whenever you want. All right.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
With our remaining couple minutes here on the show, I want to look back at some of the FC Buffalo Erie memories that, you know, stick out in my mind. And not all of them are, you know, particularly favorable for FC Buffalo, but it's been, having covered for FC Buffalo now for, I think, 6 years, it's either the sixth or the seventh year. I think it's the seventh year. That,
yeah, it's the seventh year.
Every single game against Erie is, you know, I don't want to use the word bloodbath because that's not wholly accurate because not everyone bleeds, but it's still just one of the more physical, nasty games that you'll see. And in some ways, that's just been Erie's style. And that's not necessarily a knock on them. I mean, that's how they win games. You know, they'll beat you to a pulp and they'll score a goal or two because they do bring some talent. But it's always fun to watch, and just the animosity between the two clubs. I mean, there's really no disguising it. Like, the two teams really just don't like each other. So, you know, at 7 o'clock on Friday, it'll be a new wave of FC Buffalo players, and in large part, a new wave of Erie Commodores who will play each other. Erie used to be the Admirals, now they're the Commodores. But for the first time in the last couple of years, John Melody, who is the club's owner, is back on the bench. And I think that makes a big difference because both Melody and his, you know, technical director, you could say, Neil Brown, are very smart when it comes to organizing a squad, making tactical changes. And even though they may not be the most talented team in the National Premier Soccer League, they will give you a game in and game out. You don't see Erie getting blown out a ton when John Melody and Neil Brown are involved. And there's also, you know, some familiar names on Erie. Look at Nick Dumont, who's a forward who plays at Medi, and Ryan Arvin, who's the goalkeeper, who coaches at St. Bonaventure now as an assistant and was formerly of Canisius College as a goalie. So yeah, Friday night, I know Derek Kramer will probably be there.
I unfortunately will not be there. I have to work that night.
Unbelievable.
So my apologies.
You might have to listen on WBNY.
I might have to listen here on 91.3 FM WBNY at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, that station streams the games as well if you're on the move or just want to listen to the game. They do a nice job bringing that to you. So we've reached our 6 o'clock time. I appreciate both the guests, Nick Mendola and Michael Schieber, for joining us. We've had a pretty good conversation about what's ahead. Again, FC Buffalo on Friday at 7. It's to look forward to. And then on Monday, we'll have the Football Club of Buffalo show again. Thanks for joining us.